State Farm Insurance knows that understanding and investing in our cultural identity is paramount in protecting our future. We know what it's like to go from nothing to something, to wish that we had better financial literacy when we were younger. Luckily, State Farm is here to help with funding programs like Project Ready, which is committed to education achievement and has already awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers to Black and Brown youth since 2021. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
If you're looking for the most epic place on Earth, let's start at the base of a massive waterfall. Then trek through the thick jungle. Then climb to the peak of a snowy mountaintop. Then once you get there, keep going. Because with intelligent 4x4 and 7 drive modes and a Nissan Pathfinder, the search is the real adventure.
Available feature. Intelligent 4x4 cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Yep, yep, ghetto boys is back and reloaded. All in your mouth, yeah, now deep throated. This is for the streets, the real, the railroaded. The disenfranchised, the truth, the scapegoated.
And they know it, we speak the truth, so they quote it. Cause we wrote it, the north, south, the east coast. It's the GB knocking, we keeping your head bobbing. It ain't no stopping.
And once the beat drops in, violins, the system is so corrupt. They throw the rock out their hands and then blame it on us. It's GB. Don't get it twisted. On code and we ain't dancing for no buttermilk biscuits.
It's Willie D, y'all. Scarface is in the building. Collectively, we are the Ghetto Boys.
Reloaded.
Reloaded with another episode of information and instructions to help you navigate through this wild, crazy, beautiful world. In the studio, my old schoolmate, my homeboy, my friend, my brother, a solid father, brother, son, cousin,
homeboy.
Hey, man, this dude,
activist.
This dude right here. And on top of that, the cherry on top is he's an activist. He's for the people. Derek Muhammad, family.
Good to be here, man. Happy to be among brethren.
Look, man, I'm so happy to have you
here,
man.
Thank you for having me.
You are one of those people that is earned, not given. We came from the same place.
Yes, sir.
And we walked the same streets. We walked the same halls in school.
Yes, sir.
So I know your story, but I want you to share.
So y'all went to school together?
Yeah. Yeah. Derek's a couple years under me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Really?
I got a few years under Will, but.
How many years you over me? Because Will got a few years over me, too.
I think we
y'all around the same age. Yeah, yeah.
I just turned 50 last year.
Oh, no, I'm older than you.
Oh, okay.
About a year, too.
I'm 45.
Right. Anyway. Yeah. But, from the north side of Houston, Brother Derek Muhammad. I remember Willie D back when Willie D was the local celebrity rapper. So when he became famous and people in Japan and everybody else started knowing him, we thought they already knew him.
Because Willie D is famous in Japan?
Yeah. He is. Really? I don't know. But we come from the same neighborhood. Everybody knows what goes on in the hood in the United States of America. So we don't have to itemize that. But we come from humble beginnings. And
no doubt.
All no praise is due to Allah. We living better now, but we haven't forgotten where we came from.
Man, you know, when I look at you, oftentimes I see myself, man, in that you've always been like a good brother, had a good heart. But you had some challenges.
Absolutely.
You had some challenges. I mean, you was a good dude, but you know, you got caught up for a minute, just like I got caught up.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and to see you go from basically a menace.
So you was a menace? For real?
That's what they say, face.
but to see you go from that to being a giver, mm-hmm. you know, to being a protector, mm-hmm. that's big. That's big. And to see how you dote over your daughter and how that feeling is reciprocated. Mm. It's beautiful, man, to see the relationship you have with your mother, you know, especially knowing like what that relationship was like early on.
Yes, sir.
Because, you know, your father died when you was 11 years old.
Right.
You know, your mother battled addiction.
Yes.
Similar to mine, my mom battled alcoholism, which mm-hmm. is an addiction. Mm-hmm. But your mom battled a drug addiction. Man, what was that like growing up in Northeast Houston on the north side?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, having to face those type of challenges on a daily basis.
It was rough, Will, but it was all that we knew. You know, you have some young children who say that they grow up in a household, but they don't even know that they're poor because they just don't know nothing else. They feel like it's just normal. But having a mom who was got caught up in the crack era, I look at it as her being a casualty of the war on drugs. It forced myself and my siblings to grow up very fast. My father passing away at the age of 11 forced me to grow up very, very fast. And I feel like the challenges that you face as a child, they'll either defeat you or they'll make you stronger. I believe that the challenges that I faced, I believe those that you faced, that we faced, they made us stronger. And now that God has blessed us to become stronger in the face of those challenges, it is up to us to turn the corner, to go back to where we came from, to make certain that we reach a hand out to those other youngsters who are going through the same challenges. I'm a firm believer that you must never turn your nose up at the bridge that brought you over.
Mm.
If anything, you should do what you can to repair that bridge so that others who are coming across the bridge can make it on the other side, too. So that's what I'm in the business of today, my dear brother, making certain that we are able to go back to where we came from and make it better for the next generation.
Yeah. Share with the audience that story you told me about your teacher who hip you on to literacy.
Right. So 10th grade, I came to school and I picked up my schedule. And I saw that they had me in a class called journalism. At that time, I didn't even know what the term journalism meant.
Mm.
So I sat in the class and the teacher was like, "Does anybody have any questions?" I said, "Yeah, what's journalism?" And she explained it to me. But I told her, "Look, don't worry about it. You know, too many smart children in this class. I'm going to get my schedule changed. And so you don't worry about it. I ain't coming back here no more." So she said, "Well, Mr. Jackson, give me 2 weeks. And if you still want to get your schedule changed, I will co-sign on it. But the way you got in this class is because your English teacher from 9th grade recommended you because she said that you had a talent for writing." So I said to her, "That's a hell of a thing, because I failed that class, right?" So what happened is she started teaching me, Face, how to do what's called feature writing. She'd give me a subject and she'd say, "Okay," it's almost like probably kind of like songwriting.
Mm-hmm.
And I started getting good at it. Then I started liking it. Whereas at first I was hiding from my friends that I was in this journalism class because it sounded nerdy. Now I'm out with it. Like, "Yeah, man, I'm finna take this journalism thing to the next level." So she started. Now, at the time, my mother was in the throes of her drug addiction, and we hadn't seen her for weeks.
Damn.
So it was myself and my brother pretty much living on our own, surviving how we could, and, you know, going to school when we wanted to, that kind of thing. Well, she knew what was going on in my household. She knew I was 15 with grown folks' problems. And anytime there was some kind of competition or whatever, she would come pick me up. She would bring me food. She would give me money. So she, as a teacher, unbeknownst to me, became the mother figure that I needed at a time when my mother was not in a position to be a mother. I'm saying? So she entered some of my writings into a competition. And I basically just did it for her, because this is what she did to me. She would give me something and I would write. And I would bring it back to her for her to grade it. And she would say, well, that's okay, Mr. Jackson, but I think you could do better. Back then, my last name was Jackson. Then I'd do better and give it back to her. And then she would go crazy. She would go, that's what I'm talking about. She would take a small thing that I did and she would make it big, right? Hmm. That was her way of giving me confidence. So she entered my writing into this competition. By this time, I was living with my grandmother. My grandmother had come and got us, and we were living there. So my grandmother was like, Derek, Miss Leonard's on the phone. I called. I picked up the phone, and she started screaming. Ah! Ah! And I'm like, Miss Leonard, what's wrong? She said, you got second place. You got second place. I told you you could do it. And it was the first time that I'd ever competed against white children in anything. But she had put such a battery in my back that any self-doubt that I had in myself and thinking that I couldn't compete with these white children, it was already gone. So I tell that story just to illustrate the power of one teacher, of how the power of one mentor, the power of how one individual can impact a child's life and they never forget it. Now, this was 30 years ago. I'm still talking about that to this day, you know, but I made it to state as a writer. I'm talking about coming out of Homestead Village Projects. And she picked me up to take me to the competition. And she said, Derek, she said, don't you go in here and let these rich white kids intimidate you. She said, you are the best 16-year-old writer on the planet Earth when you focused. That's the kind of battery she used to put in my back. So I competed. And I remember getting up from that desk saying, there's nothing in this room that's going to be able to compete with what I wrote. Well, she called me just like she did the first time and said, you know, now my grandmother was saying, Brother Derek, Miss Leonard's on the phone. So I pick up the phone and she's on the phone crying. I'm like, what's wrong, Miss Leonard? She said, they robbed you. I say, what do you mean? Well, the rule said that you have to write a story that's 400 words long or less. Mine was 405 words. So I did too much. But she used to judge those competitions, and she said that she never seen where they disqualified somebody for writing too many words. It was my first time experiencing systematic racism directly. We all experience it indirectly, but directly was my first time being cheated out of something, right? Now, to be honest with you, I really didn't care. I was more there for her than I was for me because I was there to prove her right, you see. All of the negative things that I had been that had been said to me about myself as a little black boy growing up the hood, she was saying something different. She was feeding the king in me while everybody else was telling me you ain't gonna be nothing in life. So I had to prove her right. And so even though they robbed me of that competition, the battery that she put in my back 30 years ago is still in my back today. So I can walk in any room and never feel intimidated, never feel less than, never feel as if though I'm not on anybody else's level, no matter who's in that room.
Have you had the opportunity to tell her this? Have you seen her?
Yes, yes.
Good, because she needs to know that.
Yes, I wrote about her in my book.
Excellent.
And
what's the name of that book?
It's called New Rules. It'll be out in a month.
Dope. Right.
But I called her and I told her and I let her know. We actually maintained contact all the way up until the time she passed away. She passed away in 2020.
Wow. Sorry to hear that.
But that year, before she passed away, some months before she passed away, I was on an airplane on my way to Nevada for my birthday. I was going to spend my birthday up in the mountains in Nevada. And as I was writing about her in the book, I just started crying, bro. Because it wasn't until then, 30 years later, that I realized, damn, God used this lady to save my life. And when I got off that plane, I called her and I let her know. But because it was, we were going through COVID protocols, I said, man, I'm going to go and see her, but I'm going to wait till things cool down with COVID. Well, a couple months later, I got a phone call from her nephew telling me that she passed away. But I want to say that to anyone who might be listening, if you have somebody that has made a difference in your life like that, don't wait to go and see them to let them know what it is that they've done for you, because tomorrow is not promised.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's but that's heavy. The power that's, of one mentor.
That's a hell of a story, man.
It is.
That is a beautiful story. You know, speaking of passing away, man, I did not know Virgis died, the owner of Sunshine.
Yes.
Yeah.
I did not know he died.
Sunshine passed.
Oh, man, R.I.P. That was a good dude.
And super good.
Yeah. May God be pleased.
Great contributor
good to, brother.
To Houston.
Yes, sir. You
know, speaking of passing, I don't know if people know, but my grandmother, that's on the My Homies album, she passed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When, Face?
June the 6th, she passed. We buried her on the 11th.
Oh, man, my condolences.
No, it's all good, man. She put up 94 on me, and she don't owe me nothing.
My grandmother passed back in October. She put up 93 years.
Yeah, she don't owe you nothing.
Nah,
I got enough. 51 years of that was beautiful. Man. Yeah, it was a fantastic run.
Yes.
And you talk about people that were inspirational in your upbringing. You know, and you being being the person that you are, you know, I share that same sentiment with my grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she gave me some stuff that I can take with me for the rest of my life and pass on to my children if they can pass on to theirs. So I understand what you're saying when you talk about people that just a big impact on your life, as well as teachers, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, teachers played a huge role in me being, you know, who I am today. I started... And this is funny. The way I started rapping was through limericks. You ever heard of a limerick?
Mm-mm.
And it's like there was a man from Nantucket who used to sit on the bucket. Mm-hmm. Like that's how I learned how to rap. And I just mastered that and got really, really good, Willie. And
it's real though.
It is, man. Something so simple can turn you into an animal, you know. Something so simple as journalism can turn you into an animal. Like, you know. Journalism, you know how to put words together. You know how to stand in front of a group of people, man, and express yourself to them about the importance of what it is you're trying to get across. You know what I mean? Like, that's heavy, man. That's heavy.
Ghetto Boys Reloaded Podcast. We'll be right back after the break.
All right, so there we were, cruising through the new open-air zoo, when I realized that the park was closing in like 15 minutes. Luckily, we were in my Nissan Rogue. With its powerful V6 turbo engine, well, we had time to see all the animals. Whoa! And outrun a few!
Drive the Nissan Rogue.
State Farm Insurance gets it. Representation alone doesn't equate to authenticity. State Farm understands and wants to help protect our communities by investing in our future, building off the hard work our parents have done before us. We all are looking to create generational wealth so that our families and generations behind us have a better starting point than we did. That begins with financial literacy. State Farm helps fund programs like Project Ready, a National Urban League program committed to the educational achievement of Black and brown youth. To date, participants have been awarded over $11 million in scholarships offers as a direct result of contributions from State Farm. At Eating While Broke, we hear inspiring rags-to-riches stories on each episode from our guests, but with State Farm, you can begin to write your own success story. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Are you still working with the mayor's office?
Indirectly, sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah, you put a lot of work in, man, especially with that Black Male Summit.
Yes, sir. The Black Male Summit is my baby. The Black Male Summit is the most important project that I've ever worked on. And it's the most important project that I will ever work on.
What is the Black Male Summit?
The Black Male Summit is a summit that we host twice a year, once on the north side and once on the south side, where we bring in young brothers from the hood and their parents. And we focus strictly on the issues that Black males face in America.
Do me a favor. Sorry to cut you off, but name some of those issues that plague the Black male in America.
The fact that your average Black male functions at a reading level of second grade.
Heavy.
That's an issue.
The average Black male, what? What age?
Just period.
That's not true, because Willie can read his ass off. Man. I'm listening to his words.
Second grade reading level is actually comprehensive. That don't mean you can't read. But yes, sir.
Wow.
At an average.
What does can't read mean, though? What does that mean? Can't read. Like, can't.
A dooba dabba dabba uba.
That's not true, Willie. Like, come on, man. Don't do that.
Listen, most of your high school graduates, even if they can read, they graduate as functional illiterates. A functional illiterate is someone who can read and call words, but they can't get a grasp on the concept of what it is that they're reading. And you have to also remember that for 300 plus years, it was against the law for us to learn how to read. So reading and writing are actually two lost arts among our people.
So my first grade teacher, her name was Miss Taylor. And she had a thing on her board, on her chalkboard, and it says, understanding what you've read. Understanding what you've read. Is that like a form of illiteracy? If you cannot understand what it is you read, that's what it's saying?
It's called functional illiteracy. When you can read the words, but it doesn't make any sense to you. You can read the words very well, but you don't understand what the... So then you have to also understand, Face, that 90% of what we're reading is culturally irrelevant to us.
I be damned.
Meaning we're reading, we can read it, but I'm not really interested in what the hell George Washington did.
That's heavy.
As far as I'm concerned, George Washington was a slave owner. He sold a slave for a keg of molasses. So these are things that if you put this in front of me, it's something that I'm interested in because I see myself in it. But most of what our young boys are force-fed in public school, they don't see themselves in it.
Speaking of which, what happened on August 2nd in this year?
August 2nd, 1900, according to this calendar, North Carolina voters overwhelmingly approve amendment to disenfranchise African Americans as part of a statewide campaign to intimidate Black registered voters.
What does that mean to you?
That means that what was going on then is still going on right now.
That's heavy, man. This is a catalog for a history of racial injustice.
Exactly. And this is the type of information that we have to feed to our children.
Because that's the only type of information that we're interested in.
Well, it's the type of information that matters, man. Knowledge of self is like the motor inside of a car.
Right.
You could have the body of the car, but if you don't have the engine, it can't go nowhere.
Man, I have no desire to study Abraham Lincoln whatsoever. I just don't.
Right.
And if we're going and talking about Sojourner Truth or Dred Scott or Pap Singleton and stuff like that, like I'm interested in those people. But when you talk about the Hayes-Tilden Act and all that crap, I don't give a damn about that, man.
Well, the only thing that we really need to know is who they were, period.
Hayes-Tilden?
No, I'm talking about...
Our...
Washington, Jackson, all of them.
Yes.
Yeah. Who the hell they were.
Yeah, they really were slave drivers.
That's it.
Not heroes.
Because from there, we know what they did.
Yeah. Right. There's an African proverb that says, when a child does not feel the love of the village, they will burn it down in order to feel its warmth.
Boy, that's heavy.
It's very heavy.
Break
it's
that down heavy. For me one time.
Because what it does is explains the behavior of our children, particularly black boys. See, we've given birth to soldiers, but we have not given them anything to fight for. When we integrated black businesses into white businesses and black businesses got eradicated while white businesses took off, what we did is we gave birth to a generation of soldiers, but what they were born to protect, we've integrated it into white society. So they're angry. They're angry, my dear brother. And I mean, think about this, right? When we came up in the 80s, you could drive down one street and you could see three different football games going on at the same time. We all playing tackle football. They did a study with lab rats, and they said that after a lab rat is finished eating, it'll actually do more work in order to enter into another space where there's another juvenile male lab rat so they can play. So to play is something that's natural for juvenile males. So why is it today that we can drive down the same streets and ain't nobody outside playing? It's because we've traded tackle football for Grand Theft Auto.
Fortnite.
Freeze tag for Fortnite. Hot ball. Remember we used to play hot ball?
For Roblox.
Yeah. So.
Well, that's toxic masculinity now. You know, they call that toxic masculinity.
Yeah,
what,
but
what? Wait, aggressive. What now?
Anything with anything with men doing something aggressive is toxic. Toxic.
Yeah,
toxic
but the thing about it is these video games, the type of it, it's not just that they're playing video games, but these violent video games that they're playing, they're militarizing our young boys before they reach the age of puberty.
Yeah, but that's not our young boys. They're militarizing their young boys because we're not walking up the street with I'm lying.
Think about what you're saying, Face.
Let me shut the fuck up.
Think about what you're saying, Face.
Let me just shut the fuck up.
No, they're militarizing our young boys.
Because we
are
walking up the streets now with assault rifles.
But we're militarized for self-destruction.
Mm-hmm.
They're militarized for something else.
They militarized to destruct us.
Exactly. And what they're doing is they're sending in militarized police officers to deal with our militarized young boys. But what I'm saying is the scientists got it down pat. If you can affect the way they play as little boys, then you can affect how they end up as grown men.
God.
Think about it. Think about it. If you see a youngster every single day, he got a basketball in his hand. He has a better chance of ending up in the NBA. You see a youngster with a football in his hand every day. He has a better chance of ending up.
See where you're going.
In the NFL, right?
Yeah.
If you see a youngster playing Grand Theft Auto 10-12 hours a day.
He gonna be a car
and that's
thief.
All he do. It's gonna impact where he ends up as a man. So that's why Frederick Douglass said that it is easier to train strong boys than it is to repair broken men.
Heavy.
We gotta catch them while they're young.
Heavy.
If we want to save them.
Which is a great segue into the documentary you produced, Raising Boys, tips for single moms.
Yes, sir.
What are some tips for single moms and raising boys in this climate?
Yes. Shout out to all of the single mothers out there who are being forced to raise their young boys on their own. And that's not a slight against the fathers, but if the statistics are worth their salt, they say that 70% of the homes in our community are headed by females, right? So there will be times when that father is not there. But some of the things that a single mom has to do, first and foremost, is she has to be realistic about what she's in. You got to do your research and understand what that boy is facing as a black male in America, and you cannot sugarcoat it for him. The worst thing you can do is keep him on the breast too long, because there's a such thing as doing too much for your child. See, you might see him as your baby boy.
Mm-hmm.
But if he goes out And every time he gets in trouble, you come and you save him. At some point, he's going to get into something you can't get him out of. And when he stands before that judge is not going to see him as your baby boy. That judge is going to see him as a grown man. I don't care if he's 12 years old. And when little boys commit grown man crimes, they do grown man time. Another thing that all parents should do is, no matter what it is that your child asks for, if he's a boy especially, you make him work for it. If he asks you for them Jordans and you know you want to buy them for him anyway, you make him go out there and cut the grass, rake the leaves, sweep the roof. Hell, I don't know. But make him do something, because what you're doing is you're establishing in him work ethic. You're letting him know that you're not going to be given anything in this world for free. If you don't do that, you send him out in the world with an unrealistic expectation that somebody owes him something. And he'll end up in prison wondering what happened. It'll hit him so fast, he won't know what happened to him. So those are some tips that we give to single moms. But another very important one is, you know, you have to study your child's father. I don't care how you feel about him. You got to study him, because if you study your child's father unemotionally, you will see in him your son's strengths and weaknesses. Whatever those strengths are, you feed those strengths.
This guy's
whatever those weaknesses are, you do your best to try to protect them from those weaknesses. But don't become so over emotionally disappointed in the father to where you're not paying attention. You think you got rid of him, but you didn't. You're dealing with him in that child. And the same goes for single fathers. We have to be systematic about this thing.
Talk about the risk in coddling boys when, let's say, they have a father who has a colorful background.
Mm-hmm. Maybe say that again, Willie.
A colorful background. Maybe they've been in some trouble with the law or something, right? Okay. Or they haven't done so well as a man. Okay. And they haven't lived up to manly expectations, you know, being a provider and protector and all of this.
What if he just can't deal with that bitch? Well, it's a difference. Go ahead. Let's
stay on track here.
Okay.
So what would be the advice to, like, a woman who tries to overcompensate to make sure that her son don't turn out like his dad? She overcompensates and she coddles him. And now, instead of raising a boy
mm-hmm.
to be a man,
mm-hmm.
she's raising the boy to be more like a woman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I've seen dudes get coddled and they argue with their mothers like their mothers is their girlfriends.
Mm-hmm.
Or something, mm-hmm. you know, they won't, like you was talking about, rewarding them for working, putting the work in. I know boys that don't do any chores. This shit was unheard of when I was growing up. They don't mow the yard. They don't clean their room.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have any kind of side job or anything. They don't do anything but stick their hand out and take mm-hmm. from their mom, and their mom will sit up and argue with them like they're their boyfriend or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I see it all the time, Will. And most mothers who coddle, as you said, their sons end up regretting it later. See, the young black male in America is what I call overmothered and underfathered. Overmothered and underfathered. Both are a problem. See, when God brings you into the world, he gives you two of everything. Two eyes to see, two nostrils to breathe, two ears. He gives you two of everything. And let's say he gives you two eyes. If you lose one of those eyes, you're considered handicapped. So every child that is born into the world has a human right to two parents, both mother and father. Okay, if the relationship between mother and father does not work out for whatever reason, that father, if you keep that child from his mother, as long as the mother is not hurting that child, you handicapping your child. And as a mother, if you keep that child away from his father, As long as the father is not hurting that child, you're handicapping your child. The child is the one who suffers. So as a mother, you have to understand the nature of a boy. All right. The nature of the male is it's about establishing dominance at every chapter in your life. That's it. That's what boys do. When we go outside, it's about who can slap box the best, who can fight the best, who can play basketball the best. It's about establishing dominance. And if he does not have a strong male in his life to teach him how to manage that, then what will happen is he'll end up veering off the road of life and you won't know what the hell to do with him. I had a partner who his child's mother got into another relationship, right? And he didn't want the man around his children, so he called over there and he threatened her and all this other kind of stuff, right? Which he shouldn't have done all of that. Well, she recorded him and told him, now, I got you, he was on probation at the time. She recorded him and said, if you come around my children again, those were his children too, I am going to call your probation officer. So now he's in the bind, acting a fool, but now he can't even see his children. So this brother went almost 10 years without seeing his children. But one day, his children's mom came looking for him. She came looking for him because the boy had gotten out of control, didn't know what to do with him. And he had to, you know, step in. Most mothers who do that regret it in the end. So to the single mothers out there, if you keep your son away from his father, you're not hurting anybody but your son. And this is the part that's heartbreaking. But I got to say it, since we on the Ghetto Boys Reloaded podcast, the sons usually end up hating their mothers. The one that does everything for them, they end up hating. I mean, I'm talking about hatred. Because you're 25, 26, 27, 28 years old. Mama's still doing everything for you. You still sleeping on her couch. Subconsciously, you blame her for you not being the man. It's really your fault, but subconsciously you blame her. And there are a lot of single mothers who take abuse from their sons after they've given them everything. Because the son grew up to hate them. You the reason I don't have a relationship with my daddy. So don't do that, sisters. You're only hurting your sons, and you're creating a scenario where he may grow up to hate you. I hate to say it, but it's true. I see it every day.
That would also have some effect on their relationships with other women. You know, I would think that if you have such a low opinion of your mother, you can't have a high opinion of women.
Facts. Facts. Yes, sir. Facts. Exclamation point.
Ghetto Boys Reloaded Podcast. We'll be right back after the break.
You know a spot. But not just a spot, the spot. Actually, with the 2023 Nissan Frontier, you know a bunch of them. But the key to these great spots? Being able to reach them in the first place. Your spot is out there. Find your Frontier in the 2023 Nissan Frontier with standard 310 horsepower, advanced tech, and 281 pound-feet of torque.
Seeing our communities grow and thrive is something we care deeply about here at Black Tech Green Money. State Farm Insurance also cares about the growth of Black communities. They're actively investing in programs and initiatives that help provide financial literacy, give early career advice, and grow Black-owned businesses, thus leading to generational wealth, which helps protect the future of our communities. We want to build a future that we all can be proud of. State Farm understands that representation alone doesn't equate to authenticity. It also requires active sponsorship of programs like the AXO, a year-long program that recognizes and rewards high school students for their academic and cultural achievements, along with funding programs like Project Ready, a national Urban League program committed to educational achievement of Black and brown youth that has awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers to date. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and can have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. AT&T connects and ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that three-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Let's talk about Savior's Day, 2022. One of the greatest, greatest days in the history of civilization. Louis Farrakhan, Honorable Louis Farrakhan, spoke back in February in a speech that was called the Swan Song.
Yes, sir.
Some people were saying that that was supposed to be his final official speech for the Nation of Islam. How true is that?
To be honest with you, Will, I don't know. I don't know. Face says he just lost his grandmother. You never know when the time is going to come for the day of your departure. But when the minister explained the Swan Song, he was basically saying that this is not necessarily my swan song. And for those who don't understand, the swan song is the beautiful song that a swan sings before he dies. The minister is saying, was saying that this is really America's swan song. Because if she continues down the road of denying Black people justice, her end is near. So this is the swan song for those who refuse to heed to the truth. This is the swan song for those who refuse to cast off false ideas and concepts. This is the swan song for those who continue to, you know, keep their foot on the necks of the oppressed. That's the way he explained it.
What's the repercussion from
what?
From keeping your feet on Black people's neck. What are we going to do?
That's a very good question.
Like,
that's
what we're going to do. We're going to go march.
I'm sorry, keeping their feet on our necks. We're going to get up. We're going to go march some more. We're going to go and congregate some more. What are we going to do? We're going to go to war. Because I think that in a society and in a country that only understands brutality and war, like the only, like you're not afraid of nobody standing up in front of your house holding no sign.
Right.
You're afraid of somebody walking in your house and beating you the fuck up or killing you. See, I'm fucked up like that. Like I ain't down. Mm-hmm. Like I ain't down with that shit. If we really, really tired of it, then let's go on and crank this shit up, man. I don't want to talk no motherfucking more. If it's on, then it's on. If it's not, we just gonna stay where the fuck we at. You know what I mean? Like I'm tired of motherfuckers spoon feeding me, man. Oh, you want to vote again? Let me take it to the Senate. Let me take it to Congress. You niggas want to eat food now? Let me see if they want to let y'all eat. You know, that's some hoe ass shit to me. Like, man, if you gonna let me be a motherfucking man, let me be a man, bro. Yes, you know,
but that's no, the problem. They don't have the power to let you be a man.
They having the power now because we can't.
Your power is within. Like nobody, I ask for permission from nobody to be a man. Like, can't nobody give me permission or let me be a man? I'm a man, period, and I'm gonna carry myself like a man. And anybody got a problem with it, I'm gonna deal with it. It's as simple as that.
Yeah. So everybody don't feel like that. Yeah, Black people, we may feel like, but what, man.
But what has happened to us as a
manly
people is we got caught up in the illusion of inclusion. Too many of us have gotten too comfortable. And so in order for us to get into that war mindset that you're talking about, a line has to be drawn in the sand.
And now, everybody got to be down with the, everybody got to stand behind that line.
Well, unfortunately, you're not going to get everybody.
Yeah, well, that's fucked up.
But we need, it is. But there's no war where there are not casualties. But we need a critical mass.
I don't know how many more casualties we need, Brother Muhammad.
I don't either.
We got more casualties than we can count. Starting back either. from the 1700s. It's all in this book right here. All in this calendar for every day.
Now we ain't got no shortage of casualties.
It's 1866. Texas passes a law providing that black people cannot testify in court unless the defendant is black. You know, like that kind of shit. You know what I mean? Like when,
ain't no
man.
Shortage of casualties.
When?
Well, we have to begin to see it for what it is, my dear brother, and that is that. I think it was W.E.B. Du Bois who said that a system cannot fail a people that was not built to give them justice in the first place.
That's true.
And the problem is we keep trying to force ourselves on a people
that don't want you around
at all. We're begging for justice from a people who don't even have it to give to themselves. We begging for jobs from a people who don't have enough jobs for themselves. See, but the black man, listen to me, but the black man in America is like a 7-foot man that's drowning in 4 feet of water.
Break that down.
All he got to do is stand up. All he got to do is stand up to save himself. Like we were saying, we have everything that we need in order to become a nation within the nation. We got the intellect. Don't tell me we ain't got the money with $1.3 trillion in spending power. But who are we spending it with? And you talking about the war? That's where the war is right there. The war is economic.
Economics,
the
yeah.
war is political. The war is educational. The war is cultural. That's where the war is. But we have to first give up this asinine idea that the American dream is somehow for black people. It never was. It is not now. And it never will be. So until we come to that come to Jesus meeting that we all got to have with ourselves and realize that we all got, then we're going to continue to suffer. See, our ancestors showed us a blueprint of it with Black Wall Street. That was just a microcosm.
Microcosm.
How do we get back to Black Wall Street?
Man, listen, I'm going to tell you.
Like you said, we got the money. We got the intellect.
Yeah.
We even got the knowledge. What we don't have, I believe, is we don't have the will.
We don't have the unity. And we have to be honest.
But let me clear up before I let you go any further. Just collectively, we don't have the will. Because there's a lot of black people out there doing great things. So I don't want to discount what you
Very
guys are doing.
Point.
They're doing phenomenal things, and they're building industries. They're taking on buying into industries. They're hiring black people.
They're creating
jobs. They're producing. So, shouts out to all you guys out there that's putting in the work.
But we have to do that with independence in mind. You understand what I'm saying? And there is a difference. You know, there's a story about the old hound dog who was laying on the porch, laying on a rusty nail. And the neighbor came over and asked his owner. He said, man, I see that hound dog over there laying on that rusty nail. Why don't he move? He said, I don't know. He said, either he too lazy to move or it just don't hurt enough.
God dang.
And in my humble opinion, that's an analogy for us as a people. Like, bro,
it just don't hurt.
Listen, we're out protesting in front of Sesame Place because Sesame Place is discriminating against black children. Bro,
you seen that?
Listen, man, what
saw that, Willie?
Listen, what more do we need to see?
Ooh-wee.
That's white folks saying that. What more do you need to see?
Mm.
Because if we are passing over the black children at Sesame Street, you're already
preempting them and indoctrinating them and letting them know that you live in racist America. Let me prepare you for this before you even get into second grade. What more do we need to see?
Damn.
The nail just don't hurt enough. Either we too lazy or it just don't hurt enough. Now, it can't be the laziness. No, black people are not lazy. You know why black people, know how I know black people ain't lazy? Who built this damn country?
For free. For free.
Yeah.
For nothing.
Yeah, no compensation.
So it can't be the laziness, but I guess it don't hurt enough. Bro, it hurt me.
That's killing me.
It hurt me, bro. We're three years up from when Nipsey Hussle got killed. I still can't get beyond it. It still got me messed up. Like, that still physically hurts me. Mm-hmm. That black man who was that special. See, you got the smart ones. You got the talented ones, you know. But you got some that's the special ones. He was a special one.
Nipsey was everything that we say we want to be. He's everything that we say that what we need to be.
Yeah.
He was that. He embodied that. And when I found, man, when I was reading the headline, I was on the internet and I saw the headline. It said, popular rapper killed. I thought it was another one of these little youngsters. And then I saw Nipsey, man, I saw Nipsey name, man. My heart just dropped. Man, I can't believe somebody would kill Nipsey Hussle. Like Nipsey Hussle.
And kicked him in the head.
But you know, they, you know.
Dang.
But and we know that there are details to it, but for what?
Yeah.
For what?
Dang.
And last week I was telling somebody this the other day. I actually said this at the Black Male Summit. And listen to me. I saw where Nipsey's killer, Eric Holder, got convicted for murder.
He first did get degree. Convicted?
Yeah, he got convicted for first degree murder a few weeks ago.
Dang.
And I asked myself the question, or I said to myself, he probably don't even care. You know why?
Because he's a hero now.
Because at least people know my name.
In his mind.
At least I'm famous now.
Nah, it's going to be bad.
At least I'm famous. Listen, let me tell you something.
Terrible,
but somebody, but they don't care. That's what I'm saying. Some of these youngsters out here, they would rather be somebody on the front of a T-shirt than to be nobody walking around in real life.
I don't get it, but okay.
I don't either. But that's how bad it is. Like, they say that this brother killed Nipsey because Nipsey made him feel irrelevant or something like that. But this whole idea of clout chasing is out of control. It's out of control. But that still hurts me to see how that brother lost his life. And just to think, just in 3 years, there's no telling how much further he would have been in his career and in doing for his community. That's just one example. But the point that I'm making is, I can't be the hound dog on the porch.
What the hound dog
laying on the porch? You ain't
gonna lay down on that porch, huh?
Nah, bro.
I can't either. I wish there was a way that we can get with everybody and get us all together, man, and we all have a task at hand to complete, man, that could better the situation for us and the ones that come behind us. You know what I mean? Like, I really think that example should be set right now by us.
Well, that is happening in some sectors. That's
yeah,
happening.
But we need to put it all together. What with you. Saying, I understand.
But going back to what Derek said, this ain't for everybody. We can't take everybody. Everybody ain't going to make it. Everybody just ain't going to make it. Some people don't even want to make it. Some people listen to what we're saying right now. That look at them niggas talking about getting together and shit. My motherfucker, I hate them motherfuckers. Them motherfucking niggas.
Who you talking about?
Niggas.
Oh, you talking about
niggas?
You talking about that girl?
I'm talking about niggas. You know they listen. They watching right now. They looking. They like, I can't stand it. They can't stand it. Mm-hmm. Get together. What the fuck you talking about? Unity, man. This is it, man. I ain't shit.
What can you imagine pulling together? That how many? What 1.3 trillion or what is it?
Yeah, 1.3. $1.3 trillion. I said tree. $1.3 trillion.
Some people, Brad, are just built that way, man, because intrinsically that's who they are.
What's the word?
That's just who.
Intrinsically.
That's who they are. You know, it's some people, man. Like we're not gonna be able to take everybody with us, and we got to be okay with that. And like we got to be okay with, like, if it went down for real, like we got to be okay with the Harriet Tubman mentality, kill a few of them.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We got to be okay with that because them motherfuckers is holding us back. And so we can't let anybody jump on the boat that would try to poke a hole in the bottom.
Poke a hole in the boat.
You know?
The problem is we have to be clear on the goal. We have to be clear on the objective. We have to be clear on what it is that we're trying to accomplish as a people. In the 60s, they were clear that they were trying to accomplish this social experiment called integration, which has not worked. That has not worked. But they were organized in every state on many levels trying to integrate. We want to eat in the same restaurants as white people.
And I think that was a big mistake.
We want to be able to use the same toilets as white people.
That was a big mistake.
Listen, not only do I agree that it was a big mistake, statistics bear witness that it was a total mistake. But what if integration was the goal back then and they knew, okay, we got one common goal, let's work toward it. What's the goal right now? If we don't establish that, then we don't know what we're organizing behind. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said decades ago, even while they were fighting for integration, that we should be fighting for what is called separation. We should have a separate system where we educate our children, a separate economy where we determine the value of our own homes and the value of our own businesses, not depending on white people. Yeah, man, think about this, right? Okay, before South Park became black, it was white. Third Ward was white. Iron Claw was white. Scenic Woods, white. Okay.
Missouri City.
And the property value in that neighborhood was high. Then integration came into play. Our people started moving from Kendleton and all of these little small black towns into these neighborhoods, right?
And it went down.
Right. Soon as we moved in, white folks started moving out. They call it what? White flight. Okay.
Okay. White flight.
White flight. So then white folk moved to Missouri City. Then black folk moved to Missouri City.
They moved to Sugar Land.
Then they moved to Sugar Land. Then we started moving to Sugar Land. Then they went out to Richmond. Right. Then they got tired of running and came back in. Right. But now, initially in the 60s, when white folks started moving out of those neighborhoods, they say the property value went down. Okay. Black folk move in, white folk move out, property value go down. So in Third Ward, the property value has been low for decades. When white folk decide to move back into the hood, all of a sudden, it skyrockets. So what are they telling you? They're telling you that the presence of white people is what determines value in this country. Mm. How the hell are we supposed to win under a system like that?
So you're absolutely correct, but it's important that we acknowledge that just because white people live somewhere don't mean that something is more valuable. And here's what I mean. Like, in these neighborhoods, well, the reason why the property value go down, not because black people move in and white people move out, it is because the politicians and the business people make a conscious decision to stop investing in those neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. And that's what drives the property value down. Because if the politicians continue to allocate funds directed into those communities to make sure that the streets are maintained, the parks are maintained, that the schools are maintained and all of that stuff, and you got good teachers, you don't need white people to maintain property value. The property value is going to increase. So what happens is that they take the resources. When white people leave,
right,
the politicians and the business people take the resources.
Right.
It ain't white presence because it's trailer parks with full of white people.
But listen,
and that shit ain't got no value.
But listen to what you're saying, Will. Yeah, they take the resources out of those zip codes. But why did they remove the resources when they were once there?
Yeah, well,
right.
To your point. To your point. But I'm just saying that's a layered, you know, theory there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but I agree. But the point that I'm making is we can't depend on that system of valuation to determine what is valuable to us. If we do that, we will always be at a disadvantage. That's the point that I'm making.
Right. And to that point, exactly. We, just to be clear, that we have to look at the value of our own communities and where we want to live at or whatever, and invest in those communities and bring resources in that community.
Right.
We actually got the power to do it.
We do. We do.
But it's like the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
You got the power, but we got to put the wheel in front of the power.
Yeah, you got to have the wheel, and you also got to have the courage.
Yeah.
A lot of Black people are afraid. The two greatest enemies.
Say that again, man.
Yeah, a lot of Black people are afraid. The two greatest enemies of Black people today is not white folks. Our two greatest enemies are ignorance and fear. If we overcome those two, then there's nothing that any white person, any Klansman, any skinhead, there's nothing that they could do with us if we overcome fear and ignorance. You can't go to war with somebody that's scared.
Right. It's a hell of a thing, man, when you got your own government targeting you for failure. The motherfuckers write the laws, they enforce the laws. They got the military, they got law enforcement, they got all the guns.
And they value the dollar. They put the value on a bill.
They
value everybody's money. Did you know that?
Mm-hmm.
And that's cold blooded. You got a number, you just write it on a piece of paper and say, hey, this is worth what that is. Whatever that number is what that little piece of paper is worth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why Gaddafi was murdered, right?
Yeah.
Because he was like, you just can't give me this piece of paper with this number wrote on it and for my oil and my gold and all. And he was like, oh, yeah, we're going to kill you, motherfucker.
You know, we're living in unprecedented times, man. And where there's a lot of changes being made by your elected officials, some say, for the bad. It seems like a lot of politicians are going out of their way to turn back the hands of times and progress for Black
mm-hmm.
people.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever get worried, man? Do you ever get worried?
About what? About?
Do you ever get worried about how we to survive this thing? Do you ever get discouraged with the fight that you put up? Because you on a daily basis, you do the work.
Gotcha.
You fight every day, all day. This is what you do.
Yeah.
That's what you do. You get phone calls all day, another tragedy. You know, like you're constantly consoling grieving mothers.
Yes, sir.
You know, grieving fathers, grieving family members.
Yeah.
And you're constantly putting in the work all day, every day. Do you ever get weary, and how do you manage that?
Yeah, I get discouraged. I do. Mm. I would be lying to you if I said that I didn't sometimes. But I never really worry. I never worry because I truly believe that this is what I was born to do. I was born to live doing it. And I was born to die doing it. So I never really worry. I also never worry because in the Nation of Islam, we're taught that what we're seeing Black people go through is biblical, is scriptural. And we're taught that the same way Joseph became the ruler in the land where he was once a slave, that's really just the story of Black America. We will become rulers in this land where we were once enslaved. I know it's going to happen. Will I see it? I'm not sure about that one, but I know it's going to happen. So I don't worry because I know that I'm just a link in the chain. I'm just trying to be as strong of a link as I can. What do I do about it? I do my best to maintain my spirituality. Because, and I don't see how you can be a freedom fighter and not believe in the Almighty. If there were no God, then Black people wouldn't have a chance whatsoever. So, yeah, I do get discouraged. I get discouraged all the time. I cry sometimes. And I ain't just really no crier like that. But my little feelings be hurt by some of the things that I see. We're losing too many, but I do believe that there's a light at the end of that tunnel, and we are that light.
Yeah. We are that light.
We are that light.
Absolutely, man. How can people get in touch with you?
Man, you can follow me on social media at Derick Muhammad. That's DERICMUHAMMAD. And hit me on my website, DerrickMuhammad.com.
Man, we really appreciate you coming out, man. It's so enlightening. I want to actually do this again. Let's have a, we need to do a weekly rant with Brother Muhammad. Like one weekly, yeah. You know what I mean? At least once or twice, once every couple of weeks, man. Let's just get on here and let's just argue about it.
You know, he off the top of the head, boy, he got some brilliant ass ideas.
I know, and it works, man.
Let's talk about it. Okay, Brad, remember we talked about, damn, Willie, I got to do Chicago.
Hey, man, thanks for coming out, man.
Y'all need a comedy show. Man. I appreciate y'all.
I've been trying to talk to him about shooting this movie, man.
Nah, y'all need a comedy show for real.
Nah, we're going to shoot a movie, and it's going to be funny as hell because we funny brothers, man.
Oh, yeah.
Together.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
We appreciate you coming out, man. Thank you very much, big brother.
Ladies and gentlemen, Derick Muhammad.
Peace and blessings.
My man.
This episode was produced by A-King and brought to you by
the Black Effect Podcast Network and iHeartRadio.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.